This is Jay Sekulow. The progressive agenda in the Congress fails spectacularly.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey everybody, welcome to Washington, D.C. We've got a lot of issues to talk about. I'm going to do a little bit of a recap on where we kind of ended up on the Mueller report, or at least what Bill Barr has released so far in his, what they called, principal conclusions. The reports are now that there's going to be actually a report that they think they'll have the Mueller report, and they said it'll be weeks, not months. I think that's good news. So there'll be probably a pretty fulsome disclosure, from what I gather, coming in the next couple of weeks. So I just want to let you all know that that is something that's happening within the context of the Department of Justice. We haven't seen it. We will not see it until you see it. That's the way it works. There's really not much else to say about that other than it was a very good week so far, that for sure, without any question. But there is a lot of other news here in Washington, one of which is you had a first, and I'll go right to Than on this, we had an attempted, or there was an attempt to override the president's veto on the emergency declaration over the border. What happened on that one?
Yeah, it needed to get to a two-thirds vote in the House of Representatives, Jay, to override the president's veto. Again, just a reminder, this was the resolution of disapproval that, if passed, would have terminated the president's national emergency declaration on the southern border. Jay, there had been a test vote on this the first time around in the House. 13 Republicans had voted with Democrats, 40 votes short of what was needed to override a veto. But Speaker Pelosi put a vote on the floor to try to override the president's veto yesterday. Again, as expected, it failed spectacularly, Jay. 38 votes short of what was needed to override the veto. So let's just cut to the chase here. What does that mean? It means that the National Emergency Declaration stands. It means that the reprogramming of dollars from the Department of Defense, which was also announced this week, by the way, the first $1 billion tranche, that will carry forward the president's proposal to build the wall through the National Emergency Declaration. It stood, Jay.
So, Harry, from a policy standpoint, we know they were trying to move the needle, so to speak, to make a stand. They knew, though, they also weren't going to be able to override this veto.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. They knew that. However, they actually strengthened President Trump's hand with respect to pending litigation. So, in other words, under the National Emergencies Act, Congress has the power to override the president's decision with respect to a national emergency declaration. They voted to override. The president vetoed it. Then they tried to override the veto. They failed. So what did Congress do? It established the fact that the president indeed did have the power to issue the national emergency declaration. And if they dislike it, basically they have the right, if you will, to override. So now if they go to court, as they already have, one of the arguments against them is that they failed to do their job. If they dislike the president's move, here is power. They had the power and they failed. So I think all in all, it was good news for President Trump going forward.
All right, we're going to take calls on this topic. We're going to talk about there was a vote on the Green New Deal. We're going to talk about that. We've got the Golan Declaration by the president this week. We're only at Wednesday. You realize that?
I do.
For me, it's been a pretty long week. A pretty good week, I will have to say, but a long week nonetheless. And then we're also going to talk about where things are generally in the body politic, but also on these oversight probes that are going on. We'll talk about all this. We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Also, let me encourage you to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. We're in a matching challenge campaign this month. You go over to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate there, we're going to get a matching gift for. So we encourage you to do that again at ACLJ.org. You should be connecting with us on Facebook, Twitter. It's a good way to stay engaged. And we'll take your phone calls. What's your comments about the week so far? Midweek report. That's what I'll call this. We want to hear what you have to say about things. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So there's, you got the Majority Whip James Clyburn saying the Mueller report has been done. It's a chapter that's closed. We now know that the report is going to come out probably in the next couple of weeks. The Department of Justice said it's weeks, not months. So that's, I think, good that that report will be out. He said health care is number one thing on people's mind. The president responded to that as well. Listen to number 10.
Let me just tell you exactly what my message is. The Republican Party will soon be known as the party of health care. You watch.
Yeah, I think that, look, let's talk about the health care issue. You've got a big announcement on that, right? The Justice Department is siding with a federal court judge who struck down the Obamacare, known as the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, well, look, and I think those two news items go together, Jay. I think part of the reason that Speaker Pelosi and James Clyburn and Leader Hoyer are desperate to get back to the issue, I think the move by the Department of Justice to try to strike down all of Obamacare, coupled with some of the proposals that are coming out of the Republican conference for essentially a replacement should Obamacare be struck down. Jay, I think it has Speaker Pelosi worried that her flagship issue, health care, is being taken over by the president, by the Republicans in the Congress. So I think she's desperate to return to it on a policy front. Now, I will tell you, I'm not so sure her proposals are that popular with the American people, but one way or another, I think she views them getting too distracted by what is coming out of the Barr report, the Barr summary of the Mueller report, would be an opportunity for her to lose ground on the health care issue. So I think she wants to pivot back to that, Jay.
So, Harry, we talked about this very briefly during the break. From a policy standpoint, it sounds like what they want to do is get back to policy.
I think that's correct. And so I think the leadership of the Democratic Party wisely wants to return to policy. Now, whether their policies are the right policies for the American people, that's a separate question. However, a large number of the progressives in Congress or the left wingers, they want to focus on President Trump continuing the attack. And so they're unwilling to accept the Mueller report. All of their hopes, all of their dreams were bound up in the Mueller report. Those hopes have been dashed, and they've been dashed spectacularly. But nonetheless, the left wingers still want to attack this president. One of their lines of attack was grounded in the notion that President Trump was illegally elected based on affirmative collusion with Russia. Well, guess what? Robert Mueller has dashed that line of attack, but nonetheless, the left now wants to focus on alleged obstruction of justice. So the leaders of the Democratic Party, they want to focus on perhaps Medicare for all. They want to focus on perhaps changing the Electoral College, packing the Supreme Court, or some other policy initiative. Again, many of these ideas are not particularly popular with the American people, including the so-called Green New Deal, which went down in flames in the United States Senate
yesterday.
We haven't
even gotten to that one. We'll save that one for a next segment or two. That was a colossal zero. All right, let me do this. We're taking calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. So you've got this kind of political shift going on right now. Do you stay on these investigations? Do you move to policy? Lewis is calling from Rhode Island. Go ahead. You're on line three. Go ahead, Lewis.
How you doing? My question
Good, sir.
Is simple. I understand that I've been following this now for 2 years, and I realize about prior to the election, during the election process and at the time that the president, the now-elected president was running, they went for a FISA warrant. Now the information is coming out that these FISA warrants may have been sworn to by these individuals in the FBI, where they have to raise their hand and actually swear that the facts contained in the petition to get the warrant are in fact true. Well, it's coming out now that there are issues regarding how they got that warrant. When and if the reasoning that the fruits of the poisonous tree, when does that become into play?
Yep.
Because usually I believe it says that any evidence gathered illegally cannot be used against you. And this
That's
was
right.
The basis
it's called
warrant.
The fruit. It's actually called, the doctrine is called the fruit of the poisonous tree in criminal law. So Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, has called for an investigation of the investigation, at least an investigation of how this whole thing started. Because you have to remember, it started as a counterintelligence investigation into Russian collusion with the Trump campaign or affiliates of the Trump campaign or associates of the Trump campaign, of which Bob Mueller said, after looking at literally issuing 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, 500 witnesses, 13 countries, and other investigatory tools that he utilized, that there was nothing. There was no evidence of collusion or conspiracy. The words he used are conspiracy and cooperation. There was none. So how it all started, I think, has to be looked at. That will be a question that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice looks at. You've got Senator Graham, Fan has been calling for that inquiry. He's very concerned about it.
Yeah, Senator Graham gave a press conference yesterday actually outlining that he's going to begin an investigation. He renewed his call for a second special counsel. Look, regardless of where that goes, Jay, I think it's very important to put out, this is not just a political spat. There were serious abuses of power, and I'll just very briefly touch on two. First of all, James Comey admitted that he leaked a memo for the purpose of getting a special counsel appointed. Jay, in my view, that is a dramatic abuse of power for the director of the FBI. Second of all, and the caller referenced this, remember, there was an American citizen that the FISA court was used to spy upon, using information, Jay, that they knew was not dependable, that they knew could not be verified, and yet an American citizen was spied on through the FISA court. Jay, those are two dramatic abuses. This is not a political spat. Those are abuses that have to be reined in. And Senator Graham, now the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has opened an investigation. I would expect at least James Comey is going to be in front of that committee before too long.
You know, it was interesting. James Comey has stated, Harry, he's made some interesting comments on Twitter. He has one where he's staring at trees and says, more questions. And I think Senator Graham came back and said, yes, I have more questions for you. But the I think the real issue here is when you look, and this is very important for the history of this case, because it's obviously one of the most significant cases in U.S. history, is looking back on it to find out, how did this actually start? That is what's going to be fascinating to find out, what the real story was that what launched Crossfire Hurricane.
I think that's precisely correct. And I think the evidence amassed so far from the testimony of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and others suggest that there was a deliberate attempt to, if you will, entrap American citizens as part of a political campaign. And if all of that is true, that is outrageous. And so Than mentioned that an American citizen, for instance, was made subject to a FISA warrant. If that American citizen was made subject to a FISA warrant based on sham evidence, then we likely have a miscarriage of justice with respect to that American. It's also important to note that a number of Americans during 2016, their identities were unmasked. Then the information was widely disseminated by the Obama administration. And then some of that information apparently was leaked. And so there are so many questions. And then we go back to the Steele dossier. What was its origin? Clearly, there was no credible evidence associated with the Steele dossier. But yet that dossier apparently was used to obtain a FISA warrant against an American citizen. So what we have is a litany of abuses that have been going on within both the DOJ and the FBI. All of that needs to be investigated, and the individuals who engaged in misconduct, if any, they should now be held responsible. So I fully accept Senator Lindsey Graham's contention that we need another special prosecutor to look at some of these areas of alleged misconduct.
So here's the thing I wanted. I'm going to, in that context, I'm going to leave it up to the Department of Justice to decide whether they think they can do this internal investigation or externally. But boy, does it! You can't ignore the fact that it has to be looked at. I mean, that's just fact. So here's what Senator Graham said.
Here's what I want to find out. Did they exonerate Clinton because they had a political bias? Did they ignore all the facts because if they indict her, they know she can't beat Trump and they wanted Trump to lose? Was the counterintelligence investigation a backdoor way of spying on Trump? There's real no evidence of working with Russia. They just used it as an excuse. Was the FISA warrant obtained unlawfully based on fraudulent documentation to surveil the campaign?
So here's what it tells me. Something has to be looked at. Some determination then has to be made here. The president said this correctly. This cannot happen to another president. No other president should have to go through what this president did.
Couldn't agree more, and there's so many reasons why, but let's just start with this one. The FISA court, Jay, that is a tool for combating terrorism. We got to make sure that that is not undermined, but when it is used for political purposes, and frankly, when it violates the rights of American citizens, it absolutely undermines the purpose for which it was created. Jay, if we're going to save FISA and the related other terrorism tools, then these kind of abuses have to be rooted out, and the people responsible for them, Jay, they've all got to be gone.
Yeah, no question. All right, we'll take your calls when we come back from the break at 1-800-684-3110. We're getting comments coming in. Phone lines are jammed. We're getting comments coming in on Facebook and Periscope. I'm going to get to some of those during the break, so get your comments in on Facebook and Periscope, and we'll get some lines open up in the next segment of the broadcast. We'll be back with more, including your calls and comments, in just a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Boy, so little time and so much to talk about. We've been talking about the looks like the Mueller report. The full report will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. They said weeks, not months. That's good news. We've got the Golan Heights declaration at the beginning of the week. We have the Green New Deal vote in the United States Senate going down. We have the attempt to override the president's declaration of national emergency failing. So there's a lot to talk about. We're getting a lot of phone calls and comments as well. Let's go to Robert, who's calling in Maryland. Robert, welcome to the broadcast. You're on.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Jay? I wanted to ask you, what's your opinion about President Donald Trump's declaration that the Golan Heights is actually a geographical part of the nation of Israel from a strategic standpoint, as well as from an Old Testament biblical standpoint, knowing that that's a part of the boundaries that God has given, you know, the nation of Israel?
Yeah, so you know, I did that book called Jerusalem on that very topic. And, I mean, it's clear scripturally, it's extremely clear. And under international law, it's also clear that this is now the sovereign property of the Jewish state, the state of Israel. Now, what's interesting here is that's the position of the Israeli government, that this is their land. It's not extraterritorial at that point. The international community has disputed this. International law supports that it's their land. But I will tell you, and the president issuing that I was able to be there for a portion of this, and was actually with the Prime Minister of Israel and Mayor Giuliani and the President, and it was just, it's a moving moment. And then the President was kind enough to give me, on behalf of really for all of you, we're putting it up on the screen right now, the declaration. So I think he signed a dozen of them like they normally do, and he handed one to me, which I am treating like it is a biblical archaeological find right now, because I'm going to get it back to the office in one piece and get it protected forever for generations to come. So I think it was a huge move. It was tremendously successful. I think it is going to help in the peace process, because as you take these issues off the table, the Golan off the table, Jerusalem as the capital of Israel off the table, it's going to, and the Arab world wants to see a resolution to this. I think taking these things off will help. Any movement on Congress?
Yeah, there is going to be movement in Congress. There's legislation. But I think, Jay, first of all, you set it up by saying that, this has been lip service from the United States since 1975. It has been semantically the position of the United States, but no administration has been willing to officially designate it. So I think you accurately describe it as taking an issue off the table, making it clear where the United States stands. Jay, two pieces of legislation, one in the House and one in the Senate, sponsored by Senator Cruz and Mike Gallagher in the House, that would essentially echo that position. And here's the reason that's important. The president has the authority to do what he did and to designate it. He doesn't need Congress to follow suit. But Jay, if they pass these two pieces of legislation, what it will do is define Israel in any appropriations or any legislation that passes through the Congress as including Golan Heights. So what does that practically mean? It means when the United States sends foreign aid to Israel, when it sends military aid to Israel, it can be used for and in the Golan Heights. Jay, I expect that to clear the United States Senate sometime in the coming weeks. The question will be, will Speaker Pelosi put it on the floor of the House? I hope she will. I think she might.
Really?
I do. Only if there's pressure from the American people. But I think this is an 80-20 issue for the American people. I think she's going to feel some pressure to
so
do it.
What would the legislation look like?
It'd be this exact legislation, the mere legislation to Senator Cruz's, that says it's the sense of the House that the Golan Heights belongs to Israel. And the most important part of that, Jay, will be that final closing part that puts Golan Heights squarely in the definition of Israel for all future pieces of legislation.
And you think that could get 80-20 support?
I think if it were voted on in the House, I think you'd only have a dozen or two that actually voted against it. Scheduling it is the key.
You think she'll do it?
I'm hopeful.
All right. We're going to work on that?
We're right. We have
not kidding.
Already.
Very important.
Already.
All right. Very good. 1-800-684-3110. Scott's calling from Colorado on line 5. Hi, Scott.
Hi, guys. Thank you for my call, Jay and Harry and Stan. I think you're all absolutely correct. The way I see this is the left is guilty of an old legal trick. If you can't find someone guilty of the core charge, which in this case is collusion, look for guilt in an ancillary charge, like obstruction. And I think Trump saw through this with this false foundation, and Comey was fired not because of obstruction, but because of his corruption. He was wed to the other side.
Well, look, first of all, it was on the prerogative of the president under Article 2 to terminate James Comey if he wanted to. He did that. Now, what's interesting about the obstruction issue is because a lot of attention's been paid to that one line in the where Bill Barr quotes Robert Mueller's report, where he says, "While we did not find that the president engaged in criminal conduct, we also don't exonerate." I said this on Chris Cuomo's program. He does. His job is not to exonerate. Number one, that's not what the prosecutor does. They either bring a case or they don't. And then there was a very interesting line in there. Of course, then the attorney general, the deputy attorney general, and the office of legal counsel determined there was no obstructive conduct. That's a pretty great exoneration. But there's also an interesting line in there where Bill Barr, quoting again the special counsel, says that Bob Mueller's team put together, saying the obstruction issue raised difficult questions of law and fact. And Harry, when you've got difficult questions of law and fact, you don't bring the case.
I think that's absolutely correct. And one of the things that we should keep in mind is the news conference at which James Comey essentially exonerated Hillary Clinton in 2016. That was not James Comey's job. And so here...
No, we can actually... Let me just step in 1 second, Harry, and then I'll let you finish. We actually said what he did to the Secretary Clinton was wrong. That it should have never happened. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So our position has always been consistent. And so in this particular case, if there's insufficient evidence to charge anyone, that constitutes an effective vindication or exoneration. And it's very important to note that Bill Barr and Rod Rosenstein and the Office of the Legal Counsel within the Department of Justice looked at the obstruction of justice claim, and there was no legal basis for bringing such a claim. Beyond that, of course, the Mueller team basically destroyed the narrative that Trump and the Trump campaign actually colluded with the Russians. Indeed, they found zero evidence that anyone from the Trump campaign engaged in collusion. So if there's no collusion, then the fundamental question becomes, how can there be obstruction of justice? Now, I know technically from a legal perspective, you can claim obstruction of justice even if there's no underlying crime. But the reality from a moral perspective is, if there's no underlying crime, there should not be an obstruction of justice charge, and there was clearly insufficient evidence to do so.
I completely concur. Here's what's interesting. I just looked at the clock, and there's only a minute and 30 seconds left in the first half hour of this program is gone. So I will say that was a fast 30 minutes of radio. I'm glad we have another 30 minutes to go. And by the way, we're adding new stations to the hour-long format every single day. Let me encourage you to stay with us. If you're on Facebook and Periscope, we encourage you to share it with your friends. We're going to reach some of those Facebook and Periscope questions during the break, so we'll get those in. But also, let me encourage you to give us a call at 800-684-3110. We have one line open, and there may be some of that other clear up, and a couple of those may clear up during the break here. 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. I was looking today. We've got a lot of activity going on. We've had teams deployed all over the country the last couple of days. But we've got an email out right now on the Hamas attacks with the rockets coming out into Israel, and at the same time the Golan Declaration, which I think was just a historic moment. Certainly was a historic moment for the state of Israel. It was a historic moment for me, too. I'll tell you that. It was a very emotional moment. David Benjamin was emotional when he was on the broadcast yesterday talking about it. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back for your calls at 1-800-684-3110. And I will tell you this also, very important here, that we want you to stay engaged with us, support our matching challenge campaign. You do that at ACLJ.org. Let me say this. All those of you who've been listening and have been praying for me and my team and our team these last couple of months, don't stop. We really appreciate it. It made a big difference.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So Sunday we get the Bill Barr report of the principal conclusions of the Mueller report. We're going to get the full Mueller report in about 2 weeks. That was a good day for the country. It was a good day for the president. It was a good day for his lawyers. Then we've got, following that right up, we had the declaration on the Golan Heights. That was on Monday. This is incredible news week. That was good news for the state of Israel, and it was an emotional moment for me as I got to participate in some of that. Then we have the vote on the override attempt on the wall, or the national emergency declaration, which failed pretty spectacularly, Than, as you predicted.
Yeah, 38 votes short of what was necessary to override the veto. And we knew this was going to happen, Jay, but yet at the same time, I think there's a temptation to downplay it. I'm not going to do that for this reason. It happened on the same week that the Department of Defense followed the president's order and reprogrammed $1 billion to begin the construction on that phase of the wall. Now, other phases had already been going, some repair and some other things, but $1 billion reprogrammed. The House had an opportunity to try to override the president's veto, and it would have nullified that $1 billion, Jay. So if very practical effect. The House failed to override the veto. And that $1 billion, that's on its way to the wall to begin construction. So we're not talking about a political spat. We're talking about tangible construction of wall.
Okay, what happened on the Green New Deal?
So the Green New Deal was on the floor of the United States Senate yesterday. Leader McConnell took the principled resolution that was put forward by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and led by Ed Markey in the Senate, put it in the form of a resolution, and gave the Senate an opportunity to vote on it. Jay, there were 10 co-sponsors on the Democrat side of the aisle, led by Ed Markey, at least five of which are running for president. Jay, nobody voted for the Green New Deal. Four Democrats actually voted with Republicans against it. So 57 senators voted against the Green New Deal. Jay, the other 43, they voted present. So this is a policy platform that they're putting forward to run on. Leader McConnell gave them an opportunity to tell the American people that they're really for this, and none of them had the courage to do it. So, Jay, look, there's really only one way to describe this. They're trying to have their cake and eat it, too. They're trying to campaign on it while not actually having to cast a vote for it. So, again, the vote total, 57 against, 0 for, and 43 U.S. senators said, eh, I'm not going
to
tell you.
Listen to the explanation that the senator from Hawaii, Senator Hirano, had to say when she was on MSNBC.
Why did so many Democrats vote present on it instead of voting yes for it?
Because this was just a sham so-called debate by Mitch McConnell. He wanted to divide the Democrats. And the bottom line is that the Green New Deal is an aspirational document that says we recognize the science behind climate change, unlike Trump and the Republicans and all of the climate deniers who want to stick their heads in the sand and make believe that climate change is not happening.
There you go. All right, I'm going to switch topics and go to a call because I don't have anything else to say on that. 1-800-684-3110. Tim's calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin, line 6. Tim, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. When dealing with the Golan Heights, which I always find interesting, I run into a lot of arguments with this when I'm writing on this, is people try to tell me that Israel stole the land from the Syrians. But the truth is the Golan Heights was included, about half of it was, in the original mandate of Palestine that was promised to the Jews, basically the Paulette Newcomb Agreement, which was in direct violation of Article 5 of the mandate, turned around and stripped
much
of the Golan Heights and gave it to the mandate of Syria or the French control.
But and also, then, also, there's another aspect of this, and that is the law of war and the law of armed conflict. And when you get territory, they attacked. Israel was successful. They pushed the Syrians back out of more portions of the Golan. That is their victory. But go ahead quickly with the rest of your comment.
Well, that was the other question I have. Is technically Syria has never signed a peace treaty with Israel. So Israel was under no obligation during this whole time to pass anything back to Syria underneath international law.
You're 100% correct, Tim. Great call. Thank you for calling in. All right, we're taking a break. When we come back, 1-800-684-3110. I've got a couple of lines open for you. We took some calls. We normally don't do that in the first 5 minutes. We did. 1-800-684-3110. We got a video coming up for our friends on Facebook and Periscope. But you give us a call right now. All of these topics we're talking about, 800-684-3110. And don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. We're talking about a whole host of issues, trying to catch up, I guess. But there's also another report that's important here. I want to go to Tham with this. This is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, known as the most liberal of the Court of Appeals, but a big development.
Yeah, so much going on, Jay. We didn't even get a chance to cover this until now. But yesterday, the Senate confirmed a fourth judge for the Ninth Circuit Court since President Trump has taken office. So the fourth nominee to the Ninth Circuit Court, Bridget Bade, was confirmed by the United States Senate by a vote of 78-21. Jay, there are three more judges pending for the Ninth Circuit that President Trump has nominated. David Fonseca in our office does a great job tracking all of this. But think about this. In just a matter of months, President Trump will have nominated seven judges that sit on the Ninth Circuit. I know the rulings out of the Ninth Circuit haven't been very good, Jay, but when you talk about seven Trump nominees sitting on
that
circuit,
you start affecting the way the court is.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could see a change in judicial philosophy, Harry, in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Absolutely, and such a change would be highly welcome, because if you look at the last couple of years in terms of litigation strategy, particularly by the ACLU and members of the left, they have generally focused their attention on bringing cases against the Trump administration somewhere within the Ninth Circuit, either in California, Hawaii, or some other state that's part of the Ninth Circuit. Why have they done that? They know that the Ninth Circuit, generally speaking, from a historical standpoint, has historically leaned left. And I think President Trump is moving expeditiously to change the shape of the Ninth Circuit going forward. That's a welcome development for people who support the rule of law, the United States Constitution as written. So we highly welcome this development.
So you got the Green New Deal gets no votes in its favor. The attempt to override the president's veto of the National Emergency Declaration doesn't succeed in the House of Representatives. The Golan Heights Declaration comes out on Monday, the United States recognizing the Golan Heights as part of Israel's sovereign territory. On Sunday, we got the report from Bill Barr, which summarized the principal conclusions of the special counsel's report. It's been a pretty good week, I have to say, all the way around, I have to say. We're taking your calls and comments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Andrea's calling from Dallas, Texas. She's on line 3. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, gentlemen. You all were mentioning the Democratic Party might be focusing now on our president in his election being looked upon as illegal. But my question is, when the Hillary Clinton campaign was in full force, and they manipulated possibly the votes coming in from Mexico or whatever they did, wasn't that considered collusion too?
Well, I don't know about votes coming in from Mexico, but look, the collusion issue was an attempt. Here's what it was. I think it's important to put this in historical context. It was a counterintelligence investigation that started before the president was even the nominee, and it was called Crossfire Hurricane. And they utilized this counterintelligence investigation to try to determine if there was what was called conspiracy or cooperation between a foreign government, Russia, or its agents, and the Trump campaign and people associated with the Trump campaign. And Bob Mueller's report says there were not. They came to the conclusion that there's not. So that is as definitive can be. And that was the basis upon which this whole thing started. So what Lindsey Graham is simply saying is we need to know what really happened here, because people's lives have been significantly impacted by this, and we need to know what has happened. And I think that there seems to be calls for Congress on that. And I do think the Democrats are trying to figure out, do we stick on this or do we get to some policy things, because there's an election literally around the corner?
Yeah, I'll say two things, Jay. First of all, we have to be able to trust our FBI and our Department of Justice and our law enforcement apparatus. That's why I do think you have to get to the bottom of the abuses as it relates to FISA, as well as leaks to set up, you know, causes for political purposes. But on the policy point, Jay, I actually think this is the most important one at the moment, because look, the 2016 election, it is over. I mean, the results are in. There's a governing body in place, but the 2020 elections are upon us. And let me tell you, there is a stark contrast between the policy proposals being put forward by the parties right now. On the one hand, you have Medicare for all. You have 70% taxation. You have the Green New Deal. And on the other side, you have lower taxes, lower regulation, and essentially the economic agenda that is being driven by the Trump administration. Jay, we are in full campaign mode. In fact, the first primary debate for the Democrats, I believe that's in June. I mean, we're talking just a matter of a couple of months away at this point. So 2016 is in the books. 2020 is upon us, though.
All right. So that, which then brings you to this point, Harry, and that is, what do you do next? What is the appropriate, if you're in the Democratic policy, well, if you're a Democratic member of the Congress, what do you think the best move, next move is?
Well, I think the best move would be to offer common sense proposals that deal with issues which trouble the American people. So, for instance, one proposal that's out there that has some bipartisan support is so-called infrastructure reform. A second proposal has to do with dealing in a substantive way with the opioid crisis. A third proposal that's out there is coming up with proposals or ideas which would lower the overall cost of health care for every single American, including lowering the price of drugs. So there are a lot of constructive proposals that are available to the leadership of the Democratic Party, but it's far from clear that they will accept this invitation to become constructive. So instead of coming up with constructive proposals, what are many Democrats focused on? Changing the Electoral College, packing the United States Supreme Court, lowering the voting age, the Green New Deal, Medicare for all, a free tuition perhaps for all, opening the borders, tearing down perhaps the wall. So many of these proposals, many of these ideas, they lack support from mainstream Americans, Democrat, Independent, and Republican. So the Democratic leadership, they can indeed offer constructive proposals, but it's doubtful that they can fully command the support of their own membership. And so I think going forward for the next 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, we are going to be peppered with often crazy ideas, and I think many of the Democratic presidential candidates will try to outdo each other, with new proposals that make little sense for the American people.
You know, I think if they go to policies and they debate their policies, that's what the American system is. You may not agree with the policy, but you have policy debates. The question is going to be, are they going to continue? When you get a release of the Mueller report, which is coming, it sounds like pretty soon here, the full report, are they going to continue doing this because it's politically, or is there going to be a fight within the party leadership and directionally, what's the right move? Because what are the consequences from a electoral standpoint?
Yeah, Jay, I mean, there is a fight right now. It's between leadership and some of the members of the caucus. I think leadership's going to win that fight, Jay. I mean, I think Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer are going to pivot to other policy items. Although I will give you this interesting caveat. If I were advising, and this is sort of a long shot, but if I were advising any of these Democrat senators running for president, yeah, I would have invited them to vote for the Green New Deal. Now, make no mistake, I think it's a terrible proposal. But if you're supportive of that and you're trying to set yourself apart for 2020, wouldn't you want to be the only one who cast a vote in favor of it? But I only bring that up to say this. It looks to me like Leader Schumer has a pretty good grasp on controlling even those running for president and trying to get them pivoting to things that are more popular with the American people. Because, Jay, all six senators who are running for president, they all voted present. None of them voted for it.
So I'm trying to figure that out. So they're saying it was because it was a manipulative vote. That's pretty much what Senator Hirono said. So it was a manipulative vote. But the reality is, why wouldn't they just voted for it? So they're on record. That's what you're saying.
They should have if it really appealed to their people. But here's the dirty little
secret. They don't
secret.
Know how much it's going to cost yet, and that's what they're worried about.
That and their voters, at least in mass, don't really support this. Certainly the base does. Certainly the base that you need for a primary does. But let's just look at that example a little bit more. Senator Hirono, she's from Hawaii, Jay.
She's not going to be able to get to the continental United States.
Does eliminating air travel work for her voters? I don't think so.
Probably
she
not.
She had to vote for president.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We're going to come back. So I've got some lines open. So 1-800-684-3110. Last segment of the broadcast, you basically get to ask us anything during the break. We're going to take comments from Facebook and Periscope. But there's a look, this was, again, I want to recap what happened. So Sunday we get the Bill Barr's, what he called the principal conclusions from the Mueller report were very good for my client, the President of the United States. On Monday, we get the Golan Heights declaration, very good for Israel, very good for the United States. I think it will help in the peace process. On Tuesday, there's an attempt to get an override of the National Emergency Declaration. It fails. They could not override it. That's good for the national security and our border security. There was an attempt to vote for the Green New Deal, and nobody in the Democratic side or Republican side, for that matter, nobody wanted to vote for it, so they didn't. It fell 60 short of getting 60 votes. So you look at this and say, okay, what's going on here? And I think what you have happening is you've got the politics of the moment trying to figure out what do you do next? What's the next right move? That's what I think a lot of this is. We're going to have the last segment coming up. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Any topic. In the last 9 minutes to go when we come back from the break, we'll also encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. You could do that at aclj.org, especially that we're in a matching challenge campaign. Back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Good week. As Larry David would say, if you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, pretty good. All right, we're taking your calls. 800-684-3110 is the last segment, so you can ask us pretty much anything. Julie's calling from California on line 4. Julie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Jay. I just wanted to take a moment to personally thank you and Rudy Giuliani for all the wonderful work you did in protecting the president. Can I say this?
I appreciate you saying thank you. Let me say this. You saw me and Rudy Giuliani, but let me tell you something. There was a tremendous team of lawyers representing the president of the United States. And I will go back and talk about in the beginning, it was Ty Cobb was the White House counsel, or was the deputy White House counsel in charge of this. And John Dowd, my colleague, in the beginning of this case, they did a great job. They laid a great foundation. Jane and Marty Raskin have been phenomenal to work with. They are great colleagues as well and have done they're unsung heroes in this. My law partner, Stuart Roth, and Jordan Seculo, and Ben Sisney, and just so many others that did great work on this. Andy Economo, who's on this broadcast all the time. So there was a big, big team that was working on this case and was involved with this matter, and it was historic. Look, I wanted to share as much of the experience as I could with others. I'm Miles Terry from our office got to work on it as well, and I wanted. Look, this was a case that doesn't happen, you know, in your lifetime, and it happened in our lifetime. So there it is. But anyways, go ahead and make your – I appreciate the comments, but I did want to give a recognition to the lawyers that you didn't see so much but did a phenomenal job in the representation of the President of the United States. Go ahead.
Thanks for letting us know that. I did not know that. One of the interviews you did, you thanked all the people praying for you and the team, and we have. And yet, the second thing you did was you thanked God for his graciousness. And that just blew me away that you're giving thanks where it belongs. And I wanted
to comment on that. I will tell you this, and I'm going to let you finish, but I will tell you this. And I acknowledge, as I always do, that you do the best you can with what God gives you. But, you know, I rely on wisdom from my colleagues, from the Lord, most importantly. And God, I would say, in these kind of situations, you know, if you're a person of faith, and not everybody is, and I understand the great lawyers that aren't, but I am a person of faith, and I said it on national TV in the last couple of days, and God was good, and the result was great, and I'm very pleased with where we are. The battles continue, but it continues at a bit of a different pace, I'll say it that way. But go ahead and finish up. I keep interrupting you, Julie, but you're saying great things, and I want to give thanks where thanks is due.
Yes. And the reason it's so important that you all protected the president is his very first day in office, he said no more abortion,
foreign funding.
Universally, yeah. And then just this week, the Golan Heights, he recognized Jerusalem Embassy last year. He's not defending the healthcare individual mandate. He just appointed, like Pham was saying, 7 judges to the Ninth Circuit, 2 justices. I mean, these are extraordinarily important reasons to protect our president. So thank you.
Well, look, I appreciate that. And again, it was these are the legal questions that were raised here. The constitutional issues were important for any president. And I think what the president said when the report came out was that it's important for future presidents as well that it was handled this way. I really appreciate you saying that. All right, we're taking your calls and comments, 1-800-684-3110. Talking about that, I think it's fair to say also we should say this. There were some big moves out of the State Department on the life issue, just following up on what the caller just said, what you just said.
Yeah, the caller talked about how on the first day in office, President Trump reinstated and actually expanded what is known as the Mexico City policy, which says that U.S. taxpayer dollars won't go to NGOs, non-governmental organizations overseas who perform or promote abortion. And he certainly did that. But when it gets down to implementation, Jay, you have to sort of work through the weeds and see which organizations either do that, either perform or promote abortion, organizations, or, Jay, give subgrants to other organizations that do that. And Secretary Pompeo yesterday made a very important announcement that they are really aggressively implementing the president's directive here. They are withholding $210,000 from the Organization of American States, an organization that, by the way, has a lot of agreement with the administration, works closely with the State Department on other issues, but they have been issuing subgrants to entities that promote abortion. And so the State Department has rightly followed the president's directive and withheld $210,000 for that purpose, consistent with the president's directive on the Mexico City policy. So I just wanted to quickly mention to the caller, these things get lost in the news, Jay, but it wasn't just a one-day proclamation by the president. He is making sure that his State Department follows through on that, and yesterday was a very specific example of it.
No question. Harry, what's your reaction to that? The State Department was very strong on that yesterday.
Well, my reaction is that this is very, very important because you have to look at the context. So many left-wingers, including Governor Northam and Governor Cuomo, have supported abortion on demand up to the moment of birth. So it's very, very important to recognize the achievements of the Trump administration in protecting life, both internationally and domestically. It's also important to note that there are many members of the United States Congress, both in the House and the Senate, who refuse to oppose infanticide. So it's very, very important that we have a pro-life president who is saying that life is indeed sacred and that he will do everything possible, including appointing judges who believe in the rule of law in order to protect life.
All right, we're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. But we also are taking some comments on Facebook. Alan says, will there be an escalation between Israel and Hamas in Gaza? Look, there has been an escalation, and the Israelis responded very correctly today, proportionately, yesterday and today. And I think that as Hamas rockets comes in, they will feel the ire of the Israeli Air Force and the Israeli Defense Force. And that's just the nature of it. All right, Dennis is calling from Alabama on line two. Go ahead. Last caller of the day. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, gentlemen. Real quick, maybe you can explain something to me. As I understand it, in the federal courts, you have the districts, you have the circuits, and their rulings, aren't they supposed to be restricted to their specific jurisdictions? Isn't that why you have, say, circuit courts, you have two or three of them that have right. differing opinions on the same issue, and the Supreme Court has to straighten that out? If it wasn't, wouldn't the first court that rules be able to trump everything else?
Well, what you're talking about there is it's extrajudicial jurisdiction. In other words, you're the Southern District of California. Can you nationally enjoin legislation? And that is something that lawyers and the courts have wrestled with for a long time because, Harry, and very, very quickly here, if you look at jurisdictionally, the answer would be no, they should not be able to do that.
I think that's precisely correct. And I think one of the things that we should keep in mind is that many judges believe they should control the entire country. And so Justice Thomas, along with some of the other members of the United States Supreme Court, would like to rein in these so-called national injunctions, and they need to be reined in and need to be reined in quickly.
All right, well, that does it for the broadcast. Can I ask you all a question? I'm going to ask you to support the work of the ACLJ. We're in a matching challenge campaign, ACLJ.org for that. That's ACLJ.org. Your support makes a huge difference, and I need to thank those of you that already are doing that. We appreciate that, and again, I want to say thank you for those of you that have been praying for us. Continue to do that. Work is not over on the president's case, but it certainly is taking a different direction, I will say, and that's good news for the country. All right, that does it for our broadcast today. Stay engaged with us on social media. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We will be with you tomorrow. I'm sure there will be. Who knows what will be in store for tomorrow? Anything quickly planned?
I'm sure there will be something, Jay.
There will be something. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.